It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats. Ryan the Hockey Guy. Jesse Granger of The Athletic with The Athletic. I don't really know. I know I beat on this every single time. Like, I don't know what you say and I don't pay enough attention to you to know what you say, but you do write articles for The Athletic with The Athletic. It doesn't really matter. Jesse, how you doing?
I am thawed out now.
The well-traveled Jesse Granger.
That was the coldest road trip I've ever been on. And last year I went to Chicago, Vancouver, Edmonton in December.
Well, you also went to Winnipeg, but
that was in May.
Yeah, I suppose that's okay. Winnipeg in May. So anyway, Columbus, Toronto, Washington. You did not go to Detroit, correct?
Skipped the second night of the back-to-back. Yeah.
Why?
Because.
I'm not giving you shit. Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah. Like, so when I'm booking these road trips, like, I obviously have a travel budget for the season, so I try to make the most for the money. Like, I try to see how much content I can get for the amount of money it costs to send me somewhere. And back-to-backs are not good for content because you don't have a morning skate. So it's not like I'm reporting things before everyone else is, because we have to wait until Gallant tells us right before the game anyways. And even then, he usually doesn't tell us. So it's like warm-ups, which you can do on TV. So there's that. And then there's also the fact that it was an early game in Detroit after a late game in Washington.
Right.
And remember, I'm not flying on the charter jet with the players who get to fly out as soon as the game ends. So
you don't get to do that?
Yeah, no.
That's ridiculous.
I'm flying commercial. So, like, just the logistics of getting there are a super pain in the ass.
Yeah.
To basically get not much content, and it costs a few hundred dollars.
Sure.
To that extra rather than just coming home. So it's like, I'll save that few hundred and use it on a different trip later in the season.
So what did you end up doing? You just stayed in D.C. and then flew back the day that they played in Detroit? Is that what you did?
Okay. Yeah, I flew back that morning, and then I was here. I landed here and then had like a couple hours before the game started.
Okay, so you were able to watch the Detroit game.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right. So here's the thing. And it's interesting because you and I talk relatively frequently in terms of watching the games, right? Like, we obviously do our thing on Twitter, but we also have threads going, you and me and Ken and some other people. Before the Capitals game, I said Washington scores five, and they did. Before the third period of the Detroit game, I said they're going to try to win this game 2-1. They're going to lose 3-2 in regulation. And then it happened. And I'm not saying this because I feel like I'm Nostradamus. I'm saying this because trends are real and you can pick up on certain things based on how teams are playing. And I know we're going to get to a couple of things from your trip, but the reason I'm bringing this up is, why can't this team play a third period that is conducive to closing a game?
I don't know, and I don't think they know.
And that's kind of the big question. Like, Gerard Gallant was asked about it, and I'm sorry, I have to call him Gallant because
I'm trying.
I know it's
everyone.
Tough.
We have recently learned it is Gallant and not Gallant.
We've been mispronouncing his name for 2.5 years,
and they just let us instead of correcting us in the beginning. Because if when they first hired him, they would have said it's not Gallant, it's Gallant. We'd all been saying it right. So we are trying to correct ourselves to say Gallant. You're better at it than I am.
It's I have to be.
It's difficult.
Remember when Nick Hague was Nick Hag for like a minute and a half?
For like a year.
Yeah. Well, you know, minute and a half. Whatever. It is what it is. So that's kind of the question that I have. And I think it's the question that's been on everyone's mind is, how do you fix this? What are the answers?
Yeah.
And it seems like right now, Gallant is trying to put some of that onus on his players by saying, ask them. Like, they've got to come up with it. Like, as much as I'm the coach of this team, as much as I can go out there and I can talk to them and I can say, you need to do X, Y, and Z better, like, I can't actually execute the game plan for them. So you have a coach that's saying, ask the players. And then you've got players that are saying, I don't know. If we knew how to fix it, we would.
Yeah.
And is that what you were getting on the trip? Like, when you're in Toronto, when you're in Washington, when you weren't there in Detroit, but when you're seeing these guys night in and night out on the road, not having the answers. Is that what you're seeing? Like, you're seeing that these guys simply just don't know how to right the ship right now.
Yeah, and the biggest issue, and like, so I was talking to Mark Stone today, and he mentioned it's when you're when you feel like you aren't playing well and you're not doing anything on the ice, it's easy to change what you're doing and say, okay, I need to do this. But when you're creating chances and when overall what's happening on the ice is going well for you, which is, if you look at all the analytics of this team, even during this losing stretch, they're playing solid hockey. Like the Corsi, the expected goals, the scoring chances, the high danger chances.
People are going to be so mad at you right
now. Every number except for the final score is saying the Golden Knights are playing well, which makes it harder to fix because you don't want to, if stuff is working, you don't want to change it. And then if it's working all the way up until the last point, which is scoring the goal, how do you fix scoring the goal? And like, I talked to Mark Stone about it, and he's like, in Detroit, we were up 2-1, and early in the third, we had a couple really, really good scoring chances, and we missed them both. And if you make either of those, the game's over. You bury the game. It's, well, it's not over, but it's a completely different feel to the game if you go up 3-1 early in the third. And they,
well, if you, okay, on the whole, though, like, and I understand what he's saying. It's harder to score two goals in the third period to come back and win a game than it is to score one goal in the third period. Like, a two-goal lead, three-goal lead, four-goal lead, it generally increases your ability to close a game. Like, I get it. But at the same time, they blew two-goal leads to Montreal and to Winnipeg at home. And now I guess we should kind of be looking at it in the right direction, right? Because they only blew one-goal leads against Toronto and
trending
Detroit.
Upward.
Well, yeah, but I understand what he's saying, but the second period in Detroit should have been when the Golden Knights pulled away.
Yeah.
And there was nothing going on for either team in the second period. They could have legitimately just not played the second period and would have had no bearing on the game whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, that was the most uninspired 20 minutes of hockey I think I've ever watched in my entire life.
Yeah.
It was unwatchable.
You asked me what the feel is on the road trip. Frustration.
I mean, I could buy that.
I wrote about it a little bit in DC. So, for those that aren't behind the scenes, when the game's over, especially on the road, at home we don't really see it, but on the road, they have a like little golf cart looking thing that you see at like the airport that drives you around, and that's what they put all their bags on to take it to the team bus. And the players have to carry, once they take all their stuff off and throw it in their bag, they have to carry their bag out of the locker room down the hallway and then throw it onto this thing. They were taking their anger out on those equipment bags. They were slamming those bags onto this cart. Marc-Andre Fleury was probably, like Dave Shane from the RJ was standing next to me, and they were all kind of frustrated, throwing them down. Nothing out of the order. And then Fleury came and did it, and we both looked over at each other like, did you see that?
Well, that's not a guy that gets frustrated.
He was furious after the DC game.
So let me ask you a question, because you get it quite a bit on Twitter. I know I get it to a certain extent on Twitter. I know Ken from Sinbin gets it on Twitter. The thought process, the idea that these guys just don't give a shit. Like, the fact that they're blowing leads and they're losing games in the third period doesn't matter to them whatsoever. Like, they just don't care.
Yeah, I get the tweets of, they all got paid this summer, so they're getting the paycheck anyway, so it doesn't matter. They aren't the misfits. I swear to God, if someone tweets me about the misfits, I'm going to have to start blocking people. I despise that word now. I used to like it. I used to like the whole, I thought the misfits thing was awesome. The group chat was named misfits. I thought it was a great story.
Yeah.
Ever since then, every time they lose, it's, well, they aren't the misfits. That's the worst excuse or reason or answer I've ever heard in my entire life.
Okay, but do you think fans are just using the word misfits to be synonymous with how the Golden Knights played in the first year? Like, and I'm not saying that they are, but what I'm saying is this team does not look on the ice the same way the team looked in year one.
Well, they're a completely different team.
I completely agree
with that. There are only like 11 guys left from that team.
That team was predicated on really ridiculous forechecking, creating turnovers, and winning in transition.
And they didn't have a lot of skill on that team.
No,
they didn't have a lot of high-end offensive skill. They just outworked teams. And these players on this team aren't that type. Like, their physical attributes aren't – Max Pacioretty isn't going to forecheck you to death. Like, he just isn't. He's a big guy that weighs a lot, that isn't super light on his feet.
Though, that's, with Pacioretty, and it's funny because –
by the way, his give-a-shit level is higher than almost everyone on the team, in my opinion.
I don't think you can look at Max Pacioretty throughout the entirety of a 60-minute game and question that he doesn't care.
Yeah, he is working his butt off out there.
So it's funny because forechecking equates to give a shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, forechecking equates to how much a player is or isn't working. I would say, though, if you keep an eye on Max Pacioretty, just because he's not always the first guy in, it doesn't mean that he's not coming up with pucks that other guys just simply can't get to.
Yeah.
Like, he is still creating turnovers. He's still moving his feet. He's still in the right places at the right time in the offensive zone.
He lays hits, too.
It's just that line plays a different way than what you would see out of your top line. When you have Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, and William Karlsson, it is just up ice, relentless pressure because they've got the foot speed and they've got the legs and they just have motors, and that's how they play. And that's what so much of their success is predicated on. With Stone, Stastny, and Pacioretty, it's a little bit more methodical.
Yes.
Like, they're not going to waste a ton of energy just trying to push you back.
Correct.
They're going to play angles and they're going to try to play with those waves and waves of pressure. And if you beat Max Pacioretty, like, that's okay. You're going to have to also beat Mark Stone. You're going to have to also beat Paul Stastny coming out through the neutral zone. And just because they're not getting those turnovers in the offensive zone doesn't mean that their forechecking is ineffective.
Yeah, I could not disagree more with the thought process that they don't care or that they aren't trying. That could not be further from the truth.
I mean, even Cody Eakin's trying.
They all are playing hard. And, like,
it's just not going in.
Yeah, just sometimes. And also, we need to take a step back, and the world isn't ending. It's
an
82-game season.
Come on.
Every team has these stretches. The Tampa Bay Lightning have had a few of these stretches already this season. Every team has them. They're still in a playoff spot, despite the fact that they've lost 5 of 6.
Mm-hmm. Well, they picked up points in some of them.
Yeah. If this is the worst stretch of your season, you're going to be all right.
We just got done talking to Gallant, right? He was a little different today, at least from what I was hearing on the road trip and what I was hearing before the team left for their road trip. Because when you're picking up loser points, it's a lot easier to say, well, you know what? Game got away from us. You know, we could be better, but you know, we're still picking up points. 7 points in 5 games. Like, that's a 115-point pace. Like, that's totally good. Everything's fine. But the fact that they lost to Detroit in regulation, to me, finally allowed Gerard Gallant to say, no, you know what? It's not good enough. Like, you know what? We need to close these games out when we have them. And I think that was kind of the message today, is we're not playing good enough. We're not executing as a team, and therefore we need to get back to that. We need to figure out a way to make it happen. And I did like the fact that he said, I'm not happy about where we're at right now, but it's not rock bottom.
Yeah.
And the question surrounding this team right now and over the next couple of weeks is this as bad as it gets, or do they tread closer and closer to rock bottom?
Yeah, I mean, if it gets worse than this for longer, then I think, like, I honestly, there shouldn't be any worry right now. I don't think there's any worry. But if it gets worse, then of course you have to eventually start worrying. But, like I said, every team, it's an 82-game season. And, like, talking to Paul Stastny and Mark Stone today, they both felt very similar, which kind of only, like, strengthens my thought of, they basically, it's like, it's a long season. Like, you're going to lose games that you shouldn't. And Stone said, early in the season, we probably won a couple games we shouldn't have won because of goaltending.
Sure.
And now we've lost a couple games that we should have won. It all evens out. And I know everyone doesn't want to hear the analytics, but the analytics say the Golden Knights are a top 5 team in the NHL. And over 82 games, if they continue to play at that level of analytics, there's a high, high, high chance that the results start trending towards that, which I think should be comforting.
if you guys hate analytics, you'll hate Jesse Granger.
Yes, you will.
All right, so I want to kind of shift gears here for just a minute, because I'm jealous of you. It doesn't happen very often, but I am jealous because you went to the Hockey Hall of Fame up in Toronto when you were in Toronto. How beautiful is that city, by the way?
Phenomenal. Yeah. It was very cool. It reminded me of New York City, and I've never been to New York City, but
you're going.
I'm going to New York City. That's my next trip. But I've never been to New York, but like I've seen a million movies. Sure. I know what New York City looks like.
Yeah.
Toronto is the New York City of Canada. It's like smaller because Canada's like 1/9 the population of the US. So it's like 1/9 of New York City, but it's the economic like center. So it's like Wall Street, and where I was kind of hanging out downtown was like the Wall Street of Toronto. So there's just thousands of suits with briefcases walking around, and there's massive skyscrapers. It was very cool, but it felt very like New York City-esque.
So Hockey Hall of Fame. Talk to me about that.
It is a cathedral of hockey. It's phenomenal. It was so cool. Like, I've been wanting to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame since I was a kid, and it lived up to all expectations. It was awesome.
You put in your application to be a goaltender for the San Jose Sharks, right?
Yeah. So it's obviously the reason you go to the Hall of Fame is for all the artifacts and all the memorabilia, and they've got like the first skates ever used in a hockey game. They've got the first stick that was like literally a branch off a tree that was curved in the shape. No, I'm not even kidding. It wasn't even a piece of wood that they cut into the shape of a hockey stick. It was literally a branch that had the curve on it. It was round, not like square. And they've got all this stuff. It's really, really cool.
Do they have Marty McSorley's stick from the 93 Stanley Cup final?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
And I combed through it pretty, I combed through everything pretty, but like there's so much stuff. You can't see it all. I spent like 3 hours in there.
Did Stormy know that you were Jesse Granger when she interviewed you?
And the thing is, when she's like, she introduced me as like Jesse Granger at the Athletic.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, she's like, oh, look who we ran into.
Did they just completely cut that part out?
And just like, oh, you're just a fan. Like, yeah, so that's the last time I'll be on that show.
Are you placing the ban right now?
Yeah, it's banned.
You're done?
Yeah, done with nightlife.
Oh, that's funny.
But anyway, so like there's so much cool stuff there, and I went through and found all the Golden Ice memorabilia, and I'm actually like asking the individual players about what it means to them to have something in the Hall of Fame for a story that I'm working on, and that'll be cool. They have the first puck ever dropped for a Golden Knights game.
Oh, really?
In Dallas.
Nice.
On October 6th, I want to say.
I feel like it was earlier than that, but maybe
whatever
maybe
it was. In 2017.
Almost seems like it should have been at home, the first puck ever dropped for the Golden Knights.
But it was in Dallas. I was there for that game. Only time I've ever been to Dallas. But so then
Dallas is an awesome city.
It is. Yeah. So then I went back and watched the game, the beginning of the game, to see which Golden Knight touched the puck first. Good trivia question. Which Golden Knight touched the puck first before any other Golden Knight in the history of
the franchise? Does a face-off count?
Any touching of the puck.
Cody Eakin.
Nope. Cody Eakin did take that face off, but he didn't touch it.
James Neal?
Nope.
David Perron?
Wrong.
Brendan Leipzig?
Wrong.
Jeez. Trying to go through the entire... Alex Tuck? Oh, wait, no, he wasn't with the team.
No.
Shipachov wasn't with the team. Please don't be Derek Englund.
No.
I don't know.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Was it really?
Dallas won the faceoff to the defenseman. He tried to passed through the middle. It went through everyone and slid on goal. Fleury covered it up with his glove for a faceoff.
How many saves did he make in that game?
It was like 53. He was amazing. Oh, but anyway, so really cool stuff like that. I went through it, and there was a whole exhibit that's like they have a part-time exhibit that's not always there, but it was the Gretzky Howe exhibit. So they had everything you could imagine from Wayne Gretzky and Gordie Howe's careers. It was pretty sweet.
I'm in for the Mario Lemieux one.
I wish there would have been more of Lemieux.
I can only imagine, and I'm not going to get off on like a Sidney Crosby tangent, but like I would assume that at some point after Crosby retires, they're going to have like the Pittsburgh Penguins wing. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
you know,
Lemieux
what?
And Jagr and
and
Crosby and Malkin and Fleury and like Tom Barrasso even. Like, there's so many. It bends my mind a little bit how spoiled the Pittsburgh Penguins have been in terms of elite, next level, all world talent.
They actually had a little thing that wasn't part of the Gretzky Howe exhibit that was a Gretzky Connor McDavid.
Really?
Like, case.
Oilers type thing?
Yeah, okay. and it was like, it almost like mirrored them. Like, they found very similar pictures of them. They made it, it was like a very, like, oh, he's the next Gretzky type of thing.
Yeah.
And it was cool. But anyways, aside from all the awesome like artifacts and memorabilia, and the trophies room is awesome upstairs. They have the hall, the great hall upstairs, which is where all the trophies are kept. It's pretty sweet. The thing you mentioned was they've got some simulator games, some like virtual reality simulators that were a ton of fun.
Who sniped you?
Zdeno Chara. I stopped McDavid. I forgot who else.
You didn't stop McDavid. When did you stop McDavid?
The whole video, that video was only like four shots.
Oh, how many shots did you take?
I want to say like 8 or 9. It was like 8 or 9
shots. How many
shots.
Goals did you allow?
I think
just one?
No, like 2 or 3.
You stopped Connor McDavid, but not Zdeno Chara?
Yeah, I know. And like see in the video I posted, you could see me laughing. I literally laughed at the guy running it because I go, really, Chara? That's the one that scores? And he sniped me top corner. But it was a ton of fun. You're sitting there looking at a projection on a wall of basically EA Sports NHL video game, and it's all, and you're like first person with the goalie, and then all of a sudden there's just all these like puck shaped holes in the wall, and the puck just comes flying out of these holes at you, and you have to block it. It's pretty sweet. They also have a shooting one on the other side where it's Carey Price. It's a projection of Carey Price on the wall, and you're trying to snipe him. The Hockey Hall of Fame is amazing.
Did you windmill any of the glove saves? You didn't catch anything?
To be honest, that simulator is not a very good simulation of actually playing goalie, because it's weird. Because it's hard to explain, but even a high shot in hockey, when you're trying to save it, it still comes from the ground.
Sure.
So the angle is coming up towards your glove, whereas the simulator, it's just shooting straight out of the wall, like perpendicular to the ground. Like
you showed another, like it was either I think it was a picture or another video of like kind of what you were looking at. I couldn't even imagine trying to make a save on that.
It's very weird. Difficult.
Yeah. So
way harder than stopping an actual shot.
So two things: how many Stanley Cups are there?
This is a bullshit question. Because there are three, but there are actually only two that look like the real Stanley Cup, right?
Well, yeah, but there's three total Stanley Cups, right?
It's the Dominican Challenge Cup, and it doesn't look like the Stanley Cup. The top of it does, but the rest of the trophy doesn't even look like the Stanley Cup.
That's true.
So I will argue that it's two, not three.
That's fine.
It's 2.5.
That's 2.5.
Because the Dominion Challenge Cup is actually about half as tall as the Stanley Cup.
Right, but that was the original Stanley Cup.
Yeah, up until like the 70s?
Probably, I don't know.
Or it might even be earlier than that. But they stopped using that one and then started using the real one. And then there's two. There's the one that's at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Oh, and that's another thing that I want to say. So the original Stanley Cup is at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And it's on display, and you can walk up, you can take pictures, you can touch it, you can do all that. And then there's that Stanley Cup, and then there's the replica, which is the one that's handed to players like on the ice, like, and the one that they're partying with and that they're taking to their hometown and all that stuff, right? Which one is cooler to you? Because to me, I think if I'm gonna touch a trophy and take in the awe of this trophy, do I want one that's been sitting in this room? Or do I want the one that Wayne Gretzky actually lifted above his head?
I'll answer it this way. So I mean, you grew up playing hockey. I grew up playing hockey. So like, I was always that idiot that was like, oh, I'm not going to touch the Stanley Cup. Like before I was a Kings fan, like, oh, I'm not going to touch the Stanley Cup. Well, and then the Kings won the Stanley Cup, and I thought like, oh, it's not going to jinx anything. And you know, I clearly was never going to make it to the NHL or anything like that. But, recently, during one of the times the Stanley Cup was here in Vegas, I ended up touching the Stanley Cup. And I don't know if you're like one of those people that believes in energy or whatever, but like I touched that thing and I was like, holy shit. I felt something. Like it you could feel something around that trophy. It was the replica. It wasn't the real one. It wasn't the one that's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's the one that everyone who has won it has held it, right?
To me, that's
I think that's what makes it awesome.
Yes.
Like I don't care. I mean, I care about the history of the league, and like I care about the fact that this is the Stanley Cup. But like, to me, no, I want the one that Crosby's won. I want the one that Wayne Gretzky's won. I want the one that Mario Lemieux held. Like, I want the one Gordie Howe has touched. Like, I don't care about the fact that it's a replica. that's the one that everyone dreams of.
Yeah.
So yeah. So to me, either, it's a replica. Yeah.
It's
for
yeah.
sure.
So now I've seen both. Because obviously, like you said, the one in Vegas, we all got to see that one.
Yeah.
I actually kissed that one.
You're such an asshole.
Look, this is what, like,
why would you kiss it? It's weird.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be an NHL player.
Sure.
And at that point, and like anyone who is an NHL player or who aspires to be an NHL player, I get the, I'm not touching it until I earn it.
Sure.
At the moment you realize that's not happening.
Yes.
Touch the crap out of the thing. Touch it all over the place. There's like, you, or even like, say you don't, you're not good enough to make it to the NHL, and but you like join, like you're a grad assistant for a college coaching staff, and like your goal is to win it as a coach.
Yeah,
sure, you still have aspirations. I personally have no aspirations of winning a Stanley Cup in any way.
Did you lift it?
No,
he wouldn't let you lift it.
That's where Phil draws the line. Is you have to earn it. You have to earn it to lift it, but you can kiss it and you can touch it.
Yeah, I wouldn't kiss. I've never kissed the Stanley Cup. I touched the Stanley Cup. That was enough for me. Like I was good with that. Now I want to do it again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like one time isn't enough.
It was cool. And then the other, the hall, like they have the Great Hall. And downstairs is very cool, but it's got kind of a like touristy, like gimmicky type of vibe to it. It's very cool and the stuff is cool, but it's very gimmicky. You go upstairs and all of a sudden it's very quiet. Like they've got the like tile floor, like it's carpet downstairs. It's got the tile floor, and it's almost like a church because the roof is stained glass.
Wow!
And everything echoes, and it just feels very like historic in there. And they've got the vault where you walk in the vault where they've got the actual the rings that they've removed from the Stanley Cup.
Oh, nice!
They've got that, and the Great Hall upstairs where all the trophies are was really really cool.
You know what they should do with the real Stanley Cup? They shouldn't remove the rings. They should just keep adding rungs.
Make it taller.
Make it taller.
If the thing's just going to be 70 feet high.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
I'm in for that.
Like, it's not going anywhere. Yeah, it's not going to move. Why not?
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
All right. Just a real quick side note before we get back into Golden Knights stuff, before people get really mad at us because we haven't talked about the Golden Knights enough in this podcast. Connor McDavid has 30 points, I believe, right now on the season. He picked up his 400th career point. And I think it's 306th game. Will Connor McDavid hit 500 points by the end of the season? That would place him at about 130 points this year.
Yeah. 130 points, he's getting 130.
Okay.
Getting 130. Did you see the goal he scored the other night where he tripped and then got up?
It was just stupid. It's
the things he does.
It's not fair.
My God, the way he just goes around everybody, it's unbelievable.
He's so good. All right, so we've been talking about the Golden Knights. They're not able to close games. They've lost more than they've won recently. They're 9-7-3. So if you count the overtime losses as like true losses, they're one game under 500 for a team that is considered, or at least going into the season, considered a Stanley Cup contender. Offensively, they've got two lines. They've got a third line that can't do anything at 5-on-5, legitimately anything. Like, they just cannot
Except score. Give up goals.
There's that,
They're
I suppose.
They're good at that.
And then they've got a fourth line that chips in more offensively than the third line does, but
I think the fourth line's fine.
They've been okay. I think they'd be better with Cody Eakin as their center, but that's just me.
I think they've been good enough, if not better than good enough.
So it begs the question, because goals are not coming for this team right now easily. What would you change? Would you try to acquire something on offense, or do you look at this team and do you say right now the defense is just not good enough as constructed?
I lean towards the second one. The defense isn't good enough. Nate Schmidt today told me something that kind of surprised me. You don't hear many like players put this much blame on players, but he flat out said to me, the defense needs to score. The forwards can't score everything. We don't have to score a ton, but we have to score something.
Mm-hmm.
And Shea Theodore has played better defensively, like leaps and bounds better defensively than he's ever played in his career this year. So I don't want to paint it as Shea Theodore's having a bad season, because he's been the best defenseman on this team. And he's a guy who hasn't been the most sound defensively in the last 2 years. He's been by far the best defense. He's been better defensively than Nate Schmidt has this season. But he isn't doing anything on the offensive end. Nothing.
If you're not a top six forward, you have not contributed enough offensively on this team. Period.
And Nate Schmidt, right along there with him, has not been good enough offensively. Braden McNabb isn't going to score a ton, but do something. Do something. John Merrill, do something. The problem is, and you said it, the top six has been scoring fine, but when they don't score, no one else helps them out. Right. They're not getting any help. And I'm not going to just put it on the third line. The third line's been horrendous. They're probably the worst third line in hockey. It's an embarrassment how bad they've been. But they're not the only ones. The defense, the blue line needs to score. Needs to pick something up.
Here's my read, and my read on the third line is this. They're probably most certainly going to get better, assuming Alex Tuch starts playing again, and when we think he'll be in the lineup tomorrow night. So that's number one. Number two, I think that that third line would be better if two things happen outside of Alex Tuch coming back. Alex Tuch coming back, that's a given. Put him on the right side. Give Will Carrier a shot to be the left wing on a third line that is going to try to kill you with speed.
Yeah.
Okay? And be physical, because those two guys, Tuch, Carrier, on the wings, would be frightening
and
for defenses.
They're the two fastest players on the team.
No, it'd be frightening. You want to talk about physical presence? Those two guys have it. Oh, and then make Cody Glass the center.
Give
Cody Glass the ability to go out there with guys that are going to play most of their time in the offensive zone, give them offensive zone starts, and just let them go out there and bang some bodies, and then you've got at least some offensive skill on that line. Don't worry about playing defense. Just go out there and make that line a line that can score, because right now, you're not getting enough of it.
I could not agree more. William Carrier, to me, has been the most improved player on the team for the Golden
Knights. And it blows my mind that Will Carrier hasn't gotten like a fair shake at being a third line left winger, because he has shown the most offensive upside of anybody on the fourth line outside of maybe Nick Waugh.
No, I think Carrier has been better. I think Carrier has been the best non-top six player on the Golden Knights.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
Including the defenseman.
Yeah, no, I think that's 100% fair.
I actually would argue that. So when William Carrier gets the puck, he turns and faces the other net and goes there and somehow gets through everyone. He'll go through three guys. Now, he can't do shit once he gets there.
That doesn't matter.
But my point is, when William Carrier gets the puck, it's in the offensive zone.
Yeah,
100%. Every time. Yep. He doesn't turn the puck over. He doesn't
try to be fancy. It's an overly simple game. Like, you know where it's going. Like, if you're Cody Glass and you're trying to kind of figure everything out as a center in the NHL, as soon as Carrier has the puck, you know where it's going.
Yes.
You know what the expectation is.
Exactly. So the point I'm trying to get to is, when Carrier gets the puck, it ends up in the offensive zone. And then it usually stays there because no one can take it from him, because he's just a freaking bulldog in the corners that no one wants to take the puck from. Now, the issue with that is, and part of the reason I've said the fourth line has been good enough, if not better than good enough, is because they spend the entire shift in the offensive zone because of William Carrier. The issue is Nick Waugh and Ryan Reeves and Tomáš Nosek don't do anything with it. They'll score every once in a while here and there. But if all of a sudden William Carrier's keeping the puck in the offensive zone for the entire shift and the other two players in the offensive zone with him are Cody Glass and Alex Tuch, something might happen.
Well, here's what I'd like to see. And I think it's addition by subtraction. And I'm not necessarily talking about trade Cody Eakin right now, because like, you've got to try to build that stock back up. But quite simply, Will Carrier, Cody Glass, Alex Tuch, give it a shot, because you know what? The worst that could happen is they don't produce anything. Just like the third line is done all year long. You're not losing anything.
Yeah, and then everyone's going to say, well, Cody Eakin's defensive, blah, 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 so they'll be bad defensively. They're not going to be worse than they are right now defensively.
No, and here's the thing. You want to talk about a line that should be defensive? Make it your fourth line.
Yes.
Put Cody Eakin at center. Play Nick Waugh. Play Tomáš Nosek. If you want to play Ryan Reeves, like, I don't care. That's fine. It doesn't matter. That line, their objective, go out there, don't get scored on. Go out there, don't get scored on. And if you have Cody Eakin and Tomáš Nosek and even Nick Waugh on the ice, you probably shouldn't get scored on. Even if you play in your own zone, you shouldn't get scored on. Because defensively, as we are told about Cody Eakin all the time, he's just a defensive player. And that's why the offense isn't coming. And he's really, really good on the defensive side of the puck. Well, okay, go out there and prove it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole argument of you can't have the Tuck glass combination on the second line without Eakin, everyone's like the entire argument against it is it won't be good defensively and they'll blow assignments and they'll give up goals. Well, right now, Cody Eakin, while on the ice at 5-on-5, and I tweeted this out for anyone who didn't see this tweet.
This is fun.
There are 292 forwards in the NHL with at least 150 minutes of ice time.
Okay.
Out of 292, these are only defensive statistics. Cody Eakin, Corsi against, so shot attempts against him, 283rd out of 292. Shots against, 284th. Goals against, 204th. Expected goals against, 275th. And scoring chances against, 212th. It's almost impossible to be worse defensively than that third line has been. It's almost impossible to be worse. So put the freaking Tuck glass line out there. If they're terrible defensively, guess what they'll be? Exactly what they've been.
You know who was killing penalties for the Golden Knights throughout preseason?
Alex Tuck. And William Will Carrier. Yeah, both of them.
Maybe they don't suck defensively.
Well, I wouldn't say Tuck is bad defensively, but I will say that Tuck turns the puck over in the neutral zone because he makes plays. He tries to make fancy plays.
But they're doing it because they're offensive players.
Exactly.
I'll live with that all day long. And let's be honest, you want at some point in Alex Tuck's career and at some point in Cody Glass's career, at some point in Will Carrier's career, they have to add that other dimension to what they do well. For Alex Tuck, it is getting through the neutral zone, making plays, and being an offensive player. What dimension does he add? Defensive responsibility. How does he do it? Not by being sheltered.
Yeah.
He does it by going through those growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
How does Cody Glass get better? By making mistakes. How does Will Carrier take the next step? Well, first, by being given a chance.
To play with players that are actually going to create.
Like, how many times this year have we seen Will Carrier make a pass in the offensive zone that we were like, oh, where did that come from?
What a pass.
And then who does it go to? Ryan Reeves. And then what ends up happening with it? Nothing.
Well, he did bury the one.
He did. One, but we've seen that pass like 10 times.
Yeah, but like what a pass by Carrier to set that up. And if that pass is going to Tuck, it isn't one goal, it's eight goals.
Exactly. And so I don't know that you need to add offense to this team. I think there are enough pieces.
I think you need to add offense to the blue line.
I agree with you, and we'll get to that here in a second. But I think there are enough pieces where the Golden Knights, if they just change their opinion or their mindset on where players need to play, and if you get rid of a little bit of loyalty, this team could be absolutely dynamic offensively.
And I don't even know if it's getting rid of loyalty because, like, is Gallant demoting Eakin from third to fourth line being disloyal to him, or is he... You're still playing every night. The minutes difference between third and fourth line isn't that drastic.
Especially when you consider that Eakin's going to penalty kill.
And yeah, not only that, and I feel like that makes Eakin's life easier because he doesn't have to get ridiculed by us every freaking day for not scoring goals.
And I know that Cody Eakin and Mark Stone have been paired up on the penalty kill. Why not just not play Mark Stone on the penalty kill?
Well, he's been really good at
it. He's been really good at it, but wouldn't you rather have his energy focused solely on 5-on-5 and power play?
Yeah. We said that at the beginning of the season.
Well, we did, but we haven't seen it because, well, Mark Stone's really good at the penalty kill. I get it, but I would much rather have all of his energy focused on creating offense.
Especially when
the team's not scoring.
He hasn't had a point in four games. Now, he's still on pace for like 80-something points this year, which is phenomenal.
I think he's point a game. He's 82. Yeah. Yep.
But he hasn't scored in four games or had an assist in four games. And maybe if he was playing a little less in his defensive zone, maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe those slumps don't happen. I just, like I said, I think they need offense. But it's, I don't think they need to add a forward. I just don't see them adding a forward. I see they, first off, a move is coming, period. It's happening. I'm 100% sure they're making a trade.
Let's kind of cut through that bullshit right now, too. Okay. So we have tweeted out more times in the last 3 or 4 days about the roster transactions for the Golden Knights. Anytime Jesse or I or Sinbin or anybody that covers the team tweets out that Cody Glass, Nick Hague, and Nick Waugh have been sent down to the AHL and it's an off day, do not panic. It is a move that is being done to accrue cap space for the deadline for the Golden Knights to acquire another player. Okay, I'm going to say it one more time. If we talk about Nick Waugh, Nick Hague, Cody Glass being sent down to the minors, and there's no game that day, or if it's an off day, or it seems like the Golden Knights don't play for a while, it's simply to save some money. So don't panic.
Every dollar counts. And it does. When you get to the like, I think what some people forget is, say there's a player that makes $3.27 million a year. That's Brendan Dillon.
Oh, I was going to say, is that Cody Eakin's cap hit?
No. That's literally the first guy I have written down on this piece of paper, so I just went with Brendan Dillon for Dallas.
All right, Brendan Dillon.
$3.275 million. You don't have to have $3.27 million in cap space in order to trade for him at the deadline. Why? Because cap is counted daily. Mm-hmm. And once you get to the deadline, four-fifths of the season has already been played, which means he's already been paid four-fifths of that salary, meaning that $3.2 million is now about $800,000. And so when you say, oh, they're sending Hague and Glass down there, they're only saving $8,000, whatever it is, on the cap. They're not saving anything. Well, you don't really need that much to add a guy. And like $3 million is a solid player in the NHL. You don't need to add that much salary cap space to add a player like that at the deadline.
So what you're telling me is it's probably not Pietrangelo.
Well, what does Pietrangelo make?
6.5.
They
can get there.
You just have to trade Cody Eakin or trade Ryan Reeves or trade Jonathan Marchessault. I don't know. I'm not saying any of those guys are going to trade. But I'm just saying you would have to move a player that makes money in order to bring in a bigger player. I'm not saying you can't get him, but I'm saying
I believe that's what's going to happen.
You could add a Sammy Vatanen.
Okay.
With having, like, you don't have to move much. Just adding that little bit of cap space and trying to accrue it, you're going to send something back in return anyway. So, like, I think they can relatively easily fit a mid-tier puck-moving defenseman, which is what they're probably going to do.
Who do you want it to be?
Mike Green.
Really?
I know. He's like as old as Derek England, right? But he's Derek England, but like Derek England is only defensive, and even that hasn't been good. Mike Green is only offensive, and that's what they need on the blue line. For one, he played for George McPhee for about 67 years in Washington. So George McPhee knows him well. I think he fits what this team does defensively because he's good at moving the puck. He can skate for his age. I think he's like 35. He's relatively cheap. He's a UFA at the end of the year, so you trade for him, and he tries to help you win a cup, and if he doesn't work, it doesn't burn you. This isn't a trade that could hurt you in the future. It's for the rest of the season, that's it, and if he helps you win the cup, cool. If not, he's gone as a UFA this summer. You're probably not going to re-sign him considering he's 35, so he's probably gone, and you're fine with it.
What about Trevor Van Riemsdyk?
Man, that'd be a nice guy to have, wouldn't it?
Crazy, because they did.
You know who is a offensively minded defenseman on a reasonable salary that could help this team on the power play? Colin Miller.
Shut up right now.
No.
Could you imagine if, like, now let's just assume for the sake of argument that we all think what will end up happening in Buffalo happens in Buffalo, and they're gonna like
they collapse.
Absolutely collapse and shit the bed, and like Rasmus Ristolainen, like at that point, it's like screw this, I don't want to be in Buffalo. I don't know what Ristolainen's cap hit is right now, but I wonder if that's a player that could use the benefit of a change of scenery. And I wonder if that change of scenery has water parks and casinos.
I mean, that's a much higher.
I know. I know.
If they can add him, screw Mike Green. I'm talking about like when I say Mike Green, I'm talking about picking guys who are UFAs at the end of the year. So non-committal trade. It's you're committing for.
So hold
for a
on,
month.
Real quick. Ristolainen is 3 more years at 5.4.
That's tough to fit onto this team. You'd have to trade Alex Tuch or Jonathan Marchessault, or how are you going to fit his salary? This isn't when you're trading. The reason the UFAs are good is because you only have to pay.
I just want a team that's going to win the Stanley Cup.
Like, you'd have to trade a major piece to get that to fit that in going forward.
Would you trade Marchessault for Ristolainen?
No.
You would not. Would you trade Marchessault for Petrangelo? If you re-signed Petrangelo at a deal that did not cost you another piece.
That's the key.
Like, if you were to go all in on Petrangelo, not that I would want to give Petrangelo like a 7-year, 8-year deal.
That would be bad.
Because that would be stupid. But like, if you were able to get Petrangelo on a 5-year deal.
Four or five, yeah.
That didn't cost you another player. Outside of just Jonathan Marchessault, would you do
it? You're saying not another purge during the summer. Like what happened with Mark Stone.
Exactly.
They got Mark Stone and they had to get rid of 3 guys in order to keep him.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would. I think Jonathan Marchessault is awesome and he's having a drought right now. He's having a tough time, but I still think Jonathan Marchessault is an awesome player. But this team has an abundance of forwards and they don't have an abundance of defensemen. And Alex Petrangelo is a freaking awesome defenseman. So, yeah, I think I would do that. I don't know if the Blues would do that, but, yeah, I think I would. I don't know if the salary cap works. I'd have to look at it closer. But if you're telling me right now it does work, I think I would make that deal. But, man, that's hard because I feel like Marchessault – and, like, I'm not a guy who, as everyone knows, I like analytics and I like hockey. I don't like the whole – camaraderie off the ice. We need a captain. That's the other thing I get a lot is, oh, if they just name us captain, then we'd win. I don't believe in all that. But even I, and I'm like on the far end of the spectrum of not believing in that crap, even I have to admit, Jonathan Marchessault is an important person on this team.
I agree.
Which makes me hesitant to make that trade. Because I really do think that Marchessault is a very, very important piece chemistry-wise and locker room-wise to this team.
You know who has a ton of freaking defensemen?
Carolina.
Tampa and Carolina. Well, yeah. Carolina, I said Trevor Van Riemsdyk. I feel like that could be a target. Why not?
They have to get rid of one because right now they're carrying, I think, 8, and none of them will pass through waivers.
Yeah.
So they're basically screwed. They have to move a defenseman, which is crazy because they just traded Falk.
I would go Trevor Van Riemsdyk. I don't think that Carolina's going to part with Hayden Fleury. Like, I think he's too big of a piece for their future.
If you could get him, man.
That would be the player. But Kevin Shattenkirk? No, okay. I understand that Tampa picked him up in the offseason. Like, I get it. I totally understand it. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Tampa's like, well, we've got way too many defensemen, and you know, you want to acquire a grizzled veteran like Cody Eakin that can help you win games in the playoffs. Maybe.
I don't see it. What is Kevin Shattenkirk doing this year?
Honestly, he's probably a healthy scratch. $1.75 million for Shattenkirk.
Kevin Shattenkirk may have more goals and more assists than the entire Golden Knights defensive core
combined.
Does
he really?
So Kevin Shattenkirk in 15 games has 4 goals and 9 assists.
Oh my gosh, yeah. See, but that's the problem. Like, the teams that have pieces are probably really good.
If I'm Tampa, why would you move him? You picked him up to help you win a cup, and he's got 4 goals and 9 assists.
You wouldn't, but like you can't just look at the crappy teams in this league. Like, I can look at the Kings roster till I'm blue in the face. There's not one defenseman on the Kings roster that entices me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and that's why I went to Mike Green, because Detroit will give him up for a pick because they're losing him at the end of the year. He's not helping them whatsoever because Detroit's not doing anything this year. They're horrible, except for when they play the Golden Knights. And you could have him for basically free. Like, you're going to get Mike Green for pretty much nothing at the deadline.
Like, even teams that are relatively okay, like the Montreal Canadiens, right? Like, they might be sellers, they might be buyers. Really, that depends on what they do over the next 3 or 4 months. But, like, would you want Christian Follin?
No, not really.
They're not going to part with Victor Mete. They're not going to part with Cale Fleury. So, like, there's nothing there.
The Golden Knights defensemen have combined for 5 goals. Kevin Shattenkirk has 4.
So here's one that I think is going to piss off a lot of people, and I hope it does.
And they have 10 assists, and he has 9 assists. So he almost beat the entire Golden Knights blue line. Here's the thing.
I'm going to throw this one out there. Bradley Hunt. 2 years remaining on the contract. $700,000!
Yeah.
Just bring him back!
They gave him away for free so that he could get more playing time, and he now has the same amount of goals as Jonathan Marchessault and William Karlsson.
Just, by the way, Jared Spurgeon, 7 years on his extension at $7.57 million, and he's 29.
Yikes.
God, Minnesota's screwing things up.
Yeah, they are. But we're painting this picture of the Golden Knights can't score. They're going to start scoring. Expected goals, they're like fourth in the league in expected goals, and their shooting percentage right now is 28th in the National Hockey League. 28th at shooting percentage. Just like when William Karlsson was shooting 50%, and we're like, that's not going to happen forever. What do you know? It didn't happen forever because math is really good at predicting this stuff. Just like when you're shooting an insanely high percentage, you know it's going to come down. When you're shooting an insanely low percentage, it's going to come up unless you have just a bunch of crap players, which the Golden Knights clearly do not have. Max Pacioretty, Mark Stone, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, Riley Smith, Paul Stastny, Alex Tuch, these guys can score. When you have the 28th ranked shooting percentage in the NHL, that's going to change. And when it does, when a reasonable amount of these shots start going into the net. I'm not even saying a high percentage, just an average percentage. They create so many chances. They're fourth in the NHL in expected goals. They create so many chances that when just an average number of these goals start going in, it's going to be an avalanche of scoring. This team is going to score this year.
I'm going to throw 2 more defensemen your way.
Let's go.
From the Chicago Blackhawks, Erik Gustafsson, 1 year. Hits UFA, $1.2 million. And then the guy I think a lot of people would want, Slater Cuckoo. Unfortunately, if you're the Chicago Blackhawks and you've got Slater Cuckoo who's going to restricted free agency, I don't think that you want to part with him, but maybe, just maybe, George McPhee can figure out a way to get Slater Cuckoo because I think that's a player that could certainly help this team.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't played a ton, so he's one of those guys that you feel like there's hope that he can be more than he has been because he hasn't gotten a ton of playing time in the NHL. Right. And this feels like the type of team that, like the type of system that you think he might thrive in. He kind of reminds me, I don't know, like Nate Schmidt in Washington was buried and didn't get to play a lot, but you can see it. Like he skates really well. Mm-hmm. Like he looks good when he's on the ice. He just doesn't play a ton. Cuckoo kind of reminds me of him. And I'm not saying he's going to be Nate Schmidt, I think given the right system and given the right opportunities, he can be better than he's been.
So Derek Englund was healthy scratched. Thoughts?
I think I shouldn't lay off him. I think Derek Englund's been one of the worst defensemen in the NHL.
Does he play tomorrow?
Yeah, I think he does. I don't think he should, but I think he does.
I don't think he does. John Merrill goes back in.
Okay.
I think John Merrill was the healthy scratch in Detroit because he was sick. Like, I think clearly
he was
based
so
on how
bad
he played against Washington. And like, let me just put it this way. Like, I don't think John Merrill just all of a sudden fell off a cliff and forgot how to play hockey. Like, I think John Merrill he finished the year last year playing phenomenal hockey. He opened up the year this year playing in a bigger role and playing pretty well for the majority of the games that he played. And then he had one atrocious game against the Washington Capitals when we've heard about the flu for the last week and a half.
I can, and like, I don't want to make this sound like an excuse at all because I'm pretty sure every team in the league has this. There's a lot of sniffling going on. Mm-hmm. It was noticeable.
Yep.
Cody Glass constantly wiping his sleeve on his face. Like, a lot of guys are sick right now. And that's, like I said, not an excuse. I think every team in the league is probably sick right now because they all play in cold weather cities and it's freaking November. So it's not surprising that they're sick, but there is a lot of sniffling going on in the
locker room. I just think that John Merrill clearly was hampered by something.
Could be that.
Because I don't think that for 18 games he's been phenomenal, or not phenomenal, but he's been
solid,
and then all of a sudden he just completely forgot how to play hockey.
Yeah, he was bad against Washington.
So, you know, I don't know. I feel like John Merrill's back in. I feel like Derek Englund comes out.
To me, what's crazy is Gallant wouldn't scratch Englund, and the biggest problem with this team, if you ask Gallant.
Who?
Gallant.
Yeah,
God damn it. See, I'm so bad at this.
Come on.
So Gallant wouldn't scratch Englund, and if you ask him or if you ask any of the players what has been the issue with this team, the first thing they all go to is puck management.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't managed the puck well. We turn the puck over in our own end. He benches Englund. The very next game, they won. And what was the reason that they won in Columbus?
Well, we managed the puck
better. And it was like, wow, amazing. I wonder why.
Weird.
And then they managed it well, and then Derek Englund went back in the lineup, and all of a sudden, they haven't managed to puck well. And why is that? Could it be?
I can give you a reason. Like, I know how to do connect the dots.
Like, I don't know. Like I said, just like with Cody Eakin, everyone always says, well, you what do you expect? Englund to score goals? No. But he can't be 213th out of 212 defensemen.
I want him to not turn the puck over in his own zone. Like, that's the bar I've set. Like, if he could just go out there and more often than not turn the puck over, then that's a win.
By the way, it hasn't looked as good this last game, but overall, the pairing of Theodore Haig, much better. Haig looks like a different player playing with Theodore than he did with Englund. And there were a couple plays that I noticed in Columbus, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That I noticed, just small plays that to me kind of tell the story for why Nick Haig is so much more comfortable playing with Theodore. And there'd be a loose puck that would kind of slide back to them in their own zone. And there's not really like a ton of pressure, but there's a guy coming, like chasing.
Mm-hmm.
And the puck is directly in between Theodore and Haig, like, split the difference. They're 15 feet apart. It's 7.5 feet in the middle of them.
Yep.
Theodore gets it with ease. With ease. Like, just...
Well, he's a good skater.
One stride, boom, got it, turns around. Whereas with Englund, Haig is the faster skater. So that puck, Haig has to get to it, and he's not... And, like, not... This isn't, like, all on Englund. Like, Haig isn't a fast skater.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes Haig an extra second to get to that puck. By the time Haig gets to it, there's pressure. They have to panic. They throw it off the wall. It goes to someone. Whereas with Theodore, any puck that's not like right onto the stick of Nick Haig, Theodore just gets it.
Yeah.
And it's why Theodore works with Englund too. Theodore works with anyone because he skates so well. But particularly for a young player who the game is fast for him, there's no denying it.
100%.
It's harder for defensemen to get into this league than it is for forwards. For him to not have to stretch his body to get to pucks, and he can just kind of let Theodore get all those 50-50 pucks.
You don't want Nick Haig to be your first man back.
Yes.
You don't want Nick Haig to be the first man on the puck, having to get there first, then sort out the coverage coming his way. You want Nick Haig to be able to see and get direction from his partner.
Yes.
That's how you get him acclimated to the NHL. If you have play after play after play where Nick Haig is the first man to touch the puck in the defensive zone and there's a forecheck coming, that's not going to be a good season. It's not going to be a good game. It's not going to be a good shift for the Golden Knights.
Another thing that I think we kind of didn't notice or haven't really talked about, and Nate Schmidt brought up. I was talking to Nate Schmidt in Columbus. It was after Nick Haig made that great play on the 2-on-1, and I wrote the story on it. So I was talking to Schmidt about Haig's like progression and has he seen him get comfortable. And Schmidt brought up, when Haig first came up, Schmidt was out, And that forced Hague to play the power play. And Schmidt told me, he was like, when I first came into the league, everyone told me, this league is hard for defensemen, mm-hmm. harder than it is for forwards. And I didn't believe him. Schmidt was like, I'll figure it out. And then he realized, like, holy shit, these guys are right. It's really hard. It's a lot. And he basically said, forwards don't have to know the intricacies of the defensemen because you dictate what happens in the play. You're not mm-hmm. reading. You do what you're doing, and then they have to read off you. Whereas a young defenseman coming in the league has to know the intricacies of every forward he's playing against. He has to know his tendencies. He has to know what he likes to do. He has to know which side he likes to drive to. There's a lot of information. When Hague comes into the league and he's also being asked to play the power play, that's a whole nother set of information, and it can be overwhelming. And Hague struggled. He got sent down. He played a game with Chicago. Nate Schmidt comes back. Nate Schmidt fills in on the power play where he belongs. Now Hague isn't playing the power play. 0 minutes on the power play since Nate Schmidt came back. And I think it's taking a chunk of information that he's having to learn off of his plate and letting him focus on fewer things. And I think that makes it easier for a 20-year-old defenseman.
We got to call it here.
All right.
Unfortunately.
That was
we
good,
did
though.
Not get to any of your questions.
Thanks
Sorry.
For sending them.
Sorry, guys.
I'll reply to them on Twitter.
Yeah. We're gonna spend a little bit of time, I think, going through some of those questions. We'll try to answer as many as we can. We do appreciate you guys sending them in. It's just, unfortunately, Jesse went to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we had to talk about it.
To be fair, though, I think a lot of the questions were about defensemen that they yep. can reach out and yep. like how to fix the third line. So like we pretty much talked about a lot.
So hopefully we got to the majority of them. Anything that we didn't get to, we're going to try to get to those. So Jesse, where can people find yourself? What are you working on?
TheAthletic.com/Granger for 40% off.
40!
40. $2.99 a month for the first year. Right now I'm working on, I mentioned that Hall of Fame piece. I'm going to have for tomorrow, I will have a first quarter report card. So a 1 to 5 star rating for every player on this team using a lot of analytics. So I know everybody likes that.
God, worst.
I tried to take like emotion and bias and opinion out of it and just look at the numbers, which means Fleury hasn't been all that good at 5-on-5, something that it's not just stuff that you guys don't like. I don't like that either because I think he's been amazing, but it's the truth. It's the numbers. They don't lie. So I'll have a very analytically based report card on the first quarter of the season up tomorrow on The Athletic.
I cannot wait for the Corsi's stupid population to start yelling at you.
They're
going to
hate it.
All right. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy, as well as on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM 1340 AM every single weekday, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show with Frank Harnish, as well as pregame, intermission, and postgame show for the Golden Knights every single Golden Knights game. We will be back with you next week. Thank you all for tuning in. And if you haven't already, please do us the favor of liking and leaving us a 5-star rating, subscribing to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, Stitcher. It really does help out the podcast. And if you don't want to comment that much, that's fine. Just leave us a comment that says #SuckItGranger. That would be helpful because the more interaction we have on those pages, the more it pushes the podcast up to listeners and new subscribers that are looking for hockey content like we provide. Again, thank you all for the questions. We will do our best to answer them as best we can. Thanks. No, Cody Ceci.
I think Cody Ceci might be my favorite one on the
he's
list.
He's bad.